Welcome to Sports, Clicks, and Politics with your host, Ben Husong, and me, Sean Hannum. Welcome to episode 115 of Sports, Clicks, and Politics. I just hit the start to Rumble button, so we're going to have to give the folks at Rumble a second to get caught up here. So they missed the intro. I got so many buttons now to push, this double broadcasting thing. So hopefully the YouTube folks are on with us now, and hopefully the Rumble looks like they're on with us now. So
I'd love to tell you.
Like, they missed nothing other than me doing a repeat of the intro twice.
I want to pull the line of, like, you had one job. But I'd be lying. You have, like, every job except, like, all I do is show up to talk. Everything technical is you, so I can't say anything.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. But, yeah, I'm still trying to I thought I had a player in the background, which I probably did on one of my open screens here. But welcome.
I'm going to level with you.
To episode 115.
It was my phone. I accidentally clicked on a video on fantasy football sites. So we were getting analysis from ESPN there. Good. Sorry, that's on me.
Sports, Clicks, and Politics. I am Sean Hannum. This is Ben Husong. We are idiots.
Having a great start to the show, yes, though.
And I feel like we have a lot to cover, so probably a rough start for getting off to an efficient, clean thing. But how was your weekend?
Good. Busy. Flag football started, so I'm coaching that now. 1-0 after week one. Good start. Got a lot of projects done around the house. Fixed the toilet. Got the basement cleaned out. We're having a big party this weekend. So, I mean, just, you know, typical weekend in our life.
And are you making an announcement for 2023 for running for office on that party? No?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Just making sure.
that's definitely in my future. Oh,
okay. Well, I mean, I thought it runs in the family.
It does. I just, that gene missed me. So, thank God.
You've been saved. Yes. Let's go right into sports and how your weekend not great in the world of the NFL, anyway, if measured by Bills' success, yes?
Not a great Sunday for Buffalo, yeah.
I mean, is it the division? You might have to be the best division. So are the Jets just good, right? Like, I think their defense has always been pretty good. I mean, I pay attention to this fantasy stuff, so they were somebody who I don't usually play players against when they're playing against. Like, early in the season, I did this because we were unsure, but now you have a little bit of a data. There is something called DVOA, which is a defensive versus opponent, like, kind of like, you know, they take how good your defense is versus how good your opponent was, and I just use that based on how I'm going to start my players against, and I almost never start players against the Jets anymore because I feel like their defense is pretty good. So I'd always thought, I was like, eh, man, if they catch a break early, bang. Like, I feel like, was it the, I don't know, first drive interception, right? And I was like, okay, this is, they got the break early, and it turned into enough of a break early to get the job done, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not hitting the panic button. I think that these games happen is...
I mean, losing to the Steelers last year was a way more embarrassing loss.
I mean, losing to the Jaguars last year was way worse than this in all reality. The reason I'm not overly upset about it is this kind of stuff happens every now and then. It's a division game, which are always a little bit wonky. You're on the road. Literally everything went right for the Jets, and the Bills played probably their worst game yet, and they lost by 3 on the road. Like, I'm not – okay, fine. It's not realistic to expect these teams to be hitting their highest rung all game, every game for 17 games. It's just not reality, so – you're going to stumble every now and then. It's a shame they couldn't stumble and still pull off the win like they did last week. But a couple key injuries came back to bite him. The Jets had a couple things go their way, and good game for the Jets. I'm not upset about it. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. I just think if you're being honest with yourselves, both teams on the best day, the Bills are going to win 10 out of 10. But you caught them on a bad day, and you got the W. Good for you guys. Enjoy the win. Yeah, I don't have a lot else. It's just tough game. Hopefully they come back stronger.
Let me give you the stat. Tell me what you make of it.
All right.
Josh Allen's record dropped to 2-7 in one score games since 2021.
I mean, I think it's a selective stat because you got to choose that time frame. Because if you go back to 2020, it's like 8-7. Like,
okay.
I think that narrative has been somewhat held on to without much of a basis. And I do think that's the type of thing that tends to work itself out over time, which was he was overwhelmingly winning in those games. And then he had last year, they were not good. But last year, basically every time they won a game, they won by 30. And when they lost by a touchdown or less.
Okay, so a little bit of trivia. You're not going to get either one of these answers. You might, but giving it, this is the heat, and that gives him the third worst winning percentage for quarterbacks, right? Who are the worst and the second worst
over the last 2 years?
Yeah, since in one score games, 2021.
Zach Wilson.
No,
I felt good about that guess. Detroit. I can't remember his name. He was
it's
that
not,
way.
It's not.
Not.
So I'm going to give you 0-2. Davis Mills.
I should have guessed
Houston,
that.
Houston guy, and Justin Fields, who had a hell of a day. Winning me some money in DraftKings.
It's not great company for Josh Allen. You don't feel about that.
No, no. Did you see Fields in that, like, what, he had like an 80-yard touchdown run?
Yeah, I think it was 70.
Yeah, whatever.
He's very fast.
45 DraftKings points. Not quite Joe Mixon level, but solid.
He had a good day.
Yeah. What about anything else in the NFL? Any other hot takes? Is Brady saved a season last night, I heard?
I mean.
That's what the fandom says.
I don't know about it. I said it last week. I don't think there's a season to save. They're fine. Luckily, they play in like arguably the worst division in football.
They're in first place.
So, like, it was always going to be okay. It was never going to be that bad, and they were going to write the ship because you have Tom Brady.
Have you bought into the Vikings yet?
Didn't I tell you last week I don't write off Tom Brady, and sure, I warned you not to. Don't write him off. It's, as soon as you write him off, he comes back.
Tell Giselle.
Do I think the Well done. Do I think the Vikings are legit? I think the Vikings are a B-plus to an A-minus team.
What about the addition of Hockenson and any other trade deadline bonuses, do you think? Did Hines play in the Bills game? I didn't watch. I was working, so
I didn't
do
much, but okay. He played. He returned punts. No, I don't think Hockenson has a huge impact.
He had a good game.
Nothing against Irv Smith, but I guess it's an upgrade at tight end.
Hey, Irv won me some money this year in DraftKings. That's very good, cheap man. Tight end option.
I just like his name. I wanted to draft him just so I could say I got Irv. I don't think Hockenson's a difference maker. I think he's a nice piece. I think Naeem Hines is a nice piece for Buffalo. I think some of the Dolphins made some big moves in the week off, and then
yeah, they got the pass rusher Chubb there, right?
And then eked out a 3-point victory against Chicago. Like, yeah. All right, great, you got all this firepower, but you still go toe to toe there. Like, that's what I mean. Like, good teams have bad weeks; it happens, and it's the NFL. It's not college football. And on any given Sunday, any team in the NFL can win a game. The talent disparity from the best to the worst team is not as grave as in college football is from the top team to the number 7 team. Like. It's just, it's a much more narrow window of talent and ability. So, Check it off. It happens, Bills fans. Move on.
The Bills are listed as losers in this Press Connect article I am in the trade deadline. That's only because they said they missed out on the chance to get McCaffrey. But anyway.
The Bills don't run the ball. Yeah, what are they going to do with McCaffrey?
I don't really agree with that. I do think, listen, we'll see what happens. If anybody who doesn't look good right now looks good at the end of the season, a la the Cincinnati Bengals, I feel like it's the Niners.
Niners, I think, are a similar
team. If they get healthy, if everybody
Vikings.
Gets good, like, I feel like their defense can be pretty good, too. And if McCaffrey can be that piece, like, I feel like if there's anybody who's, you know, I mean, they're 4-4 right now. So if you look at anybody who's 500 or below, like, they're the team who I could see, like, winning, like, 8 in a row.
The reason I can't trust the Vikings is because as soon as the stage gets bright, Kirk Cousins shrinks.
No doubt.
So I think they're a good team, but I think that's a severe limitation. I think the 49ers are a similar team, but I trust Kyle Shanahan more in big games than I do. I don't even know who's coaching the Vikings anymore, but let's go with
Mike Zimmer.
Kirk Cousins. Oh, yeah, that's right, Mike Zimmer. I just trust him more. So I don't know. I'm not counting out the Buccaneers because the team is just too talented, and they do have Tom Brady, which is a big deal in the NFL. In case you haven't been paying attention for the last 20 years, when he's got a higher average, like, going to Super Bowls than Steph Curry does hitting a 3. Like, don't write the man off. I don't know how many times we have
left. And I'm not going to do it now, but it would be interesting to go through their schedule and see how much division they have left because their division is terrible, right?
Awful.
So if they can just beat up on their own terrible division, they probably get there.
They're probably going 5-1 in the division, so you got 5 wins before you even have to play a game outside the division.
Do you think the Seahawks are a playoff team or no? Maybe. Then we'll move on. I don't know. They look okay. I know.
But somehow, yes. Like, I, there's no way I can answer that question, yes. But if you just took away the team name and I didn't know who the quarterback was and you said, there's a team in this division, these are the records, these are the standings, these are the stats, I'd be like, obviously that's a playoff team. But I can't get there because it's the Seattle Seahawks led by Geno Smith, and I cannot wrap my brain around this.
Yeah, me neither. But they're there. All right. Who plays tonight? I forgot already.
Saints-Ravens.
Saints-Ravens. Ravens 5-3. Saints, what are they? They got to be terrible.
No, I think they're okay.
3-5.
3-5, yeah.
Not exciting. All right. The only other thing I really have to touch on in sports, did you watch any of the World Series?
I refused.
Okay. Astros.
If you ain't cheating, screw you
those.
Ain't trying.
Screw those dudes.
So right. Much for that whole cheaters never win.
I mean, elections. Duh.
We'll get to that.
Okay. All right. Let's touch on... I didn't tell anybody because we were such a cluster to start the show. I didn't remind anybody to like the show either. So just to pile on to my terrible intro.
Well, now that we have this,
please like and share the show today, folks. We need it. We need all the
algo love.
Yeah, to fight the overlords. Let's touch on a story that we had very limited news of. When we touched on it, and we have more to digest, but I still don't feel like we have a lot. Paul Pelosi? So this, I don't even know where to go in this update. So I have this one article up here, and this is the Daily Mail. Let's see when it's dated here. November 6th, so yesterday. 5 key questions in bizarre Paul Pelosi hammer attack from the debunked claims he walked toward his attacker to now the pay struck after police arrived at it or whatever. So these are the questions. So... just so we know, excuse me again. Let's backtrack a little bit. We, when we talked about this last week, the information we had was sketchy at best. We had just kind of got the police report or the statements from DePap himself, but there seemed to be inconsistencies. And then I think I shared the NBC, I think it was Today Show, news segment with you, which is now deleted and now is being described as erroneous and by people in NBC, and NBC says it didn't meet up to their level of standards because it kind of stoked the fire again after kind of some of it was out for a little bit, where like people were like, hey, you're just a bunch of heathens out there spreading misinformation. Elon Musk is, you know, tweeting crazy stories to Hillary Clinton on Twitter and shit. So It literally the first day he takes over, that's his second tweet is like that, which is crazy.
Hilarious.
It is the times that we live in. But anyway, so I'm not saying that story is by any means anything other than just now deleted tweet from Elon Musk. But the source is not the best, I guess. The NBC thing is confusing to me because we first heard about this third person. This is still my, if I had to have one question, and maybe there's multiple questions in here, but it's one inconsistency that I still can't get my head around. First, we heard there's an unknown person opens the door. Very well could be Paul Pelosi, unknown to the police, I guess. It turns out that there is no third person. That's what we were told. There is no third person. And that Paul Pelosi opened the door and let the police in, and that's when DePap hit Pelosi with the hammer while the police were basically standing in their presence. So to this, the NBC report states that Pelosi answers the door, trying to validate that assertion there, but then says he walked back into the house towards the attacker, away from the police, and doesn't signal to the police that he was in danger in any way as he's opening the door. So bizarre, right? And this is the part that I feel like NBC is trying to say is erroneous, that he did signal for help to the police or whatnot. But the official story is that when the police came in, they were already struggling, right? And, you know, they had been there together for a half hour. So if they're already struggling, who opened the door? This is there can't be both. They can't have both of those things happening simultaneously, right? I mean, I guess in theory you could say they were rolling around on the floor and all of a sudden they ended up at the front door with the police there, and Paul Pelosi, while he was getting choked out, was opening the door and the police were there. I don't buy it. So, like, somebody had opened the door, or there was no altercation as he was opening the door, right? Like, there had to have been some kind of calm or pause within whatever was happening to allow Pelosi to open the door.
Sure. So, 82-year-old Paul Pelosi rolling on the ground, Greco-Roman style.
That's what I'm saying.
Breaks away, pops the door open.
It doesn't make sense for there to have been an altercation and then the police allow him to still maintain the hammer, right? Like, they didn't walk in on them fighting. There's no way they walked in on them fighting.
Not if somebody opened the door.
Right. Well, unless it was a third person opened the door and said, oh, my God, look, they're fighting. And then run in there, break them up, and they saw him hit him with a hammer, right? Like, I could see that scenario. They said there's no third party.
Can I just throw this out there?
Yeah.
If I'm ever in my home and being attacked by anybody, gay, prostitute, schizophrenic, or just a normal home invasion, and the cops are standing in my home, knowing it's my home, and they watch somebody bash my skull in with a hammer, when I come to, if I find out they did not riddle that man with bullets, I am going to be furious. Like, what in the world are you doing? Like, what would constitute a use of deadly force more than a dude is bashing my head in with a hammer in my own home, and you're sitting there armed, and you didn't even tase the guy? You didn't shoot him? Yeah, listen, what are we doing?
Listen, I could see them being in a situation where they're close enough. Like, so, I think this is part of the official story. Who knows anymore? When the police enter the house, they address DePape, and we're like, you know, what's going on? He's like, all good. Like he says, all good. And then he just whacks the dude with the Pelosi with the hammer, right? So
it's not funny.
No, but let's just say that I don't even know. I haven't put together anything what I think happened yet, but I do think there's a chance. Let's just say, and let's add this one more thing. If this guy, and like I said, I don't think anybody thinks he's the brightest, you know, bulb in the tree there kind of thing, but you would think if he was going to go through this effort to attack and kidnap the speaker, which is what we're led to believe, that he would make sure she's home too, right? I mean, wouldn't that be like the first thing on the checklist? Yes.
Know.
Well, maybe the first thing is like, yes, she lives here. Okay. Is she home? That should be number two.
If I was going to try to kidnap...
Again, I'm not trying to rationalize it.
That's what I would do. I would start there. But I've never considered kidnapping anybody, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about here. Yeah. Maybe that's not
I don't know. Like I said, to say that it's... the official story is still hard for me to believe at this point. So, I don't know. That's all I'm saying about that, I guess.
Do you have any other
Paul Pelosi takes?
Yeah, I want to read this whole thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Hilarious. Listen, this might be riddled with inaccuracies. There is a lot we don't know. My takeaway is I feel like I'm being told a lie that's probably 90% true. Like, it's a very good lie because there's probably a lot of truth to the lie, but I know that I'm being misled somewhere. So just bear with me because, like I said, there's probably a few inaccuracies in this, but it made me laugh. So if we're to believe the media, a rainbow flag-waving nudist prostitute got up at 2 a.m. Friday morning, decided to create two random websites with hundreds of posts about QAnon and Big Brother in the dead of night. Then, stripped down to his underwear, grabbed a hammer, and jogged all the way to Nancy Pelosi's house, and miraculously breached two layers of max-level Secret Service security designed to protect the third most powerful person in the world with nothing but a hammer and some tighty-whities. And finally shouted, "Where's Nancy?" before smacking Paul in the head with a hammer in front of cops without being absolutely riddled with bullets. This guy is basically freaking Jason Bourne, apparently. He could breach two layers of federal security and an assassination attempt, but didn't bother to check if Nancy was even in the country.
Fair take.
I don't know how he got there. I don't know what he was doing there. I don't know where these websites came from. Maybe they were in existence for a long time. I don't know. But if you just listen to all of this and your only reaction is, yeah, that all makes sense.
Here's going to be my take from the time. Here's the best I can make of it right now. This dude probably knew the Pelosi's barely because of some activism group that he did for whatever, like some legit activism, like in San Francisco, like, you know, some whatever. I don't even know what. Not, they don't know each other well. Let's just say that. This is my assertion right now. That, but they're, he's well enough to know that, hey, this is where they live and whatever. And if they saw me in their presence, they'd be like, oh no, that's David, the crazy dude, right? Or whatever. And so maybe he did break in and maybe he was, you know, looking for Nancy or whatever. But I don't think he was either, he wasn't alone or he was either, he wasn't alone or he was invited in. Well, I don't know. He could have broken in for sure. Cause he broke, I'm pretty sure he broke the back window, but I would bet that there's some kind of history between the two or the Pelosi's and his, some activism that at least made it think that this guy in his head, that he knew the Pelosi's better than he thought he did anyway. And that he was going to be able to, I don't know, negotiate something with them by breaking in and into their house. But I mean, he's a crazy person. So it's hard. I'm trying to, you know, get in the head of a crazy person. I'm not going to do it.
I don't know. Listen, we could speculate left, right, and center, but here's the central theme, I think, where you and I do agree. There's some piece of this missing. Like, something is off.
And this is what led me to believe, because they're trying to cover up the fact that maybe, hey, this guy did know them and they don't want that aspect to come out. They're trying to whatever, because that would offset the whole MAGA part of it, but I don't know.
I'm not dismissing the idea that this was a consensual tryst. Like, I'm not dismissing that at all.
I'm not dismissing
it. I don't have any evidence of that, obviously, but like we said last time, it's not that it's necessarily true, but man, that would make a lot of boxes checked off of how did this come to be? Like, how did this guy get here? Why was he in his underwear at 2 o'clock in the morning? Why was he, I don't even know what to say about the hammer, but like, how were the police just welcomed into the home?
If they released the video, I guess, I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but the security cameras that are placed there they're CIA cameras. So like all that stuff is plugged into like, you know, a war room where they have a bunch of fucking cameras and they can, all over the country, like in all these specific locations. So they can, it turns out that they were only alerted to it because Nancy wasn't home. They weren't paying attention to those cameras supposedly. And even though, but they supposedly recorded because the guy went back and watched and said he saw him break the window and only was alerted to it because he, while skimming all of these monitors, he saw police lights in one of the backgrounds and was like, what the hell's going on there? Went to that camera and was like, oh, and then went back and rewound it and watched the guy break in. But show the video. Then just release the video. And then then the questions that, you know, you can remove a lot of doubt by just putting out the video. That's all. That's my take.
I agree.
So
sunlight is the best disinfectant. Shine some light on it. Let's see what we got.
Stop trying to get people to drink bleach.
I would never.
You just said the word disinfectant.
Yeah, sunlight. Get some vitamin D, baby. Let's go.
All right. Let's talk about one of the friends of the show, Bill Hammond, had this article. You guys remember Bill Hammond? Yes. He writes for the Empire Center here. It's a think tank for Empire policy, public policy, kind of like... from a center-right libertarian kind of take, I feel like. He has a little bit of that.
I don't think he has a libertarian take.
He's made some libertarian positive comments before. I think he's a left libertarian, if anything. Okay. But
I remember I'm not.
I don't want to have that discussion.
Okay, fine. Let's just move on.
But anyway, so headline of his piece here from November 3rd. Hochul's pandemic study is off to an underwhelming start. So if you remember, Hochul said she wants to get to the bottom of what happened and how we responded the way we did and all that good stuff. And so she made some commission, right? Well, I don't know. Is there a commission in here? Did she make it? Oh, no. She hired Olson Group Limited. It's a, you know, some kind of, they're from Alexandria, Virginia. So I'm assuming some kind of CIA outfit. what?
That's good.
Probably, right? That's I mean, it's pretty 50-50. At least
50-50, yeah.
But so they're going to do the investigation, but they don't have subpoena power. Like it's all show. It's a show thing. Right. So, and this is an article of, and I linked it into the show notes. So everybody go, give Bill Hammond a read here, but outlines how, let's see. Officials said the pending contract calls for the firm to be paid $4.3 million, with a report due in 1 year. Right. So I don't know. I have zero confidence this is going to unveil like new unheard of information on how, I don't know, Andrew Cuomo was misled and Kathy Hochul was misled by public health officials down the path, but or whatever. So that would be a great outcome. If somebody could actually show that the public health were deceiving our public officials, that would even be a better story. But I feel like they just all were idiots and didn't know any better. But anyway, the idea that New York is going to get to the bottom of what New York did through this commission or whatever is, I don't know. I have, let's say, less confidence in that than I do Joe Biden running up a set of stairs.
I mean, it's fair.
We talked, we've been, you know, we can go back for 114 episodes and we can talk about New York's COVID response. And vote accordingly tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that they locked you down, closed your business, and made your kids stay at home.
So,
and let grandma die alone. So vote accordingly.
Yeah, that was rough.
And this would be a good time, and I'll let you go then. But if you guys are not aware, Ben and I will be hosting a Election Day show with live coverage. I think we're going to probably go on a little before 9 and then try to, I don't know, cover as long as we can, as long as we can hold out. We have a bunch of guests. I have Assemblyman Salka has agreed to come on. He's going to come on right at 9 and maybe come on a little bit after we get some results, too. I have Cicero Town Councilor Michael Bacallo is going to come on. I have Jefferson County Legislator Jeremiah Maxson is going to come on, offer a little bit of insight and analysis as the results come in. I have Luke Riddell, I think is how you pronounce his name, is a young reporter out of Newhouse. He's going to come on the show, too. Nice. He's excited. He said he has other live gig appointments.
Okay.
That day, but I told him that our show is going to be way more fun. So
obviously.
I mean, it's hosted by a libertarian. I mean, come on.
And whatever the hell I am.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
We're not going to try to figure that out now either. So hopefully you guys will all tune in tomorrow for Election Day analysis and coverage, and we'll see what happens here. But I wonder if, do you think, and I guess I'll just move on to the next subject here because it's COVID response related, I guess, but you had sent that article to me and I didn't realize how much of a backlash it was actually probably going to get at the time, but holy amnesty backlash. I feel like Twitter ganged up on Emily Oster there and basically said amnesty, and anybody who was thinking along those same lines, I'm sure she probably ran that thought by some other people before. Maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, the idea that those of them who got it so wrong at the beginning should not be, they fake apologized. No accountability has been done. There's, you know, no, seemingly nothing in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. So we're supposed to all move on.
Yeah.
Nobody seemed to kind of buy that take, as neither did we here last week when we talked about it. But, yeah, I don't know. Do you think there's ever, what do you think the, I think there has to be, like, the way that the amnesty article was laid out was so condescending to the folk, to me. Like, reading it was just like, okay, you didn't acknowledge any wrongdoing whatsoever at all, didn't seem to care if it would ever happen again, which is, you know, if anything, from all of the bad actions that we have experienced over the last 2.5 years, the people who got it wrong should have realized, like, hey, we shouldn't do that again. I haven't heard anybody say that yet. Like, nobody is really saying that. And, you know, because it's a mission of guilt and nobody's willing to do that yet. And deservingly so.
All right. So if you want to talk about amnesty, you don't just get to, like, do all the wrongdoing and then get a decree of amnesty. Listen, this is a terrible analogy, but I don't have a better one to go off of. So post-Civil War, there was amnesty given to all of the lower-ranking Confederate soldiers. Not the higher-ups, not the people, not the generals, not Robert Lee, not Jefferson Davis, but there was amnesty given to the soldiers. I believe it was anybody that was a captain or below as an officer in all enlisted forces were given amnesty for the crime of treason. But you know what happened before the amnesty? That side surrendered. That side basically said, we're done. We can't fight anymore. You've won. It's over. We're done. And then after there was the concession and the, okay, we're done. You're right. We'll give back everything. We'll do all this. Then there was the discussion of amnesty. You're trying to skip that very important step where you have to give up the fight and you're not giving up the fight. Like what you just pointed out, you want to be able to do all this again. That's not a surrender. That's not giving up. And the people on my side, I don't want to speak for anybody but me as far as my stances. What is important to me is that we don't ever do this again. Like, you have to acknowledge how wrong this was. Now, Emily Oster thinks she's in some unique position to comment on it because on top of advocating for masks, for travel restrictions for the unvaccinated, for all of this other stuff to apply pressure on people, she was one of the earlier advocates that schools should be open. Okay, you don't just get to take a lot of credit because you got the most obvious issue of the entirety of the pandemic correct. There was never any good data to support the idea that we should be shutting down schools, ever. The idea that you want credit for that is no different than my son wanting credit because he pointed out the sky is blue. Like, well, congratulations, but that's not a winning argument. That is the most baseline objective fact that you should have been able to get. It doesn't excuse the rest of it. So, you know, we shouldn't be masking kids at all under any circumstances. There should be no force. That we shouldn't be coercing people into getting an experimental vaccine. People should not have lost their jobs. People should not have lost their businesses. The lockdowns were wholly inexcusable and unjustifiable. And please stop telling me you didn't know. You didn't want to know. Because there was those of us on this side telling you over and over again, stop. Stop. This is crazy. This is insanity. You're going to hurt people. And we got told to shut up. So now you want to turn over like, well, there's no way we could have known. What? How about let's start with this. Hey, you know what? You were right.
Yeah.
I was scared and I didn't see it, but you were right. It was crazy that we did all this.
Yeah. That sentence alone would get you past the front door with me.
I'm
saying. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't even need the you're right part, but like you all were right. Right. Like that side was right. Like we confused you for something that you weren't.
Yeah, I guess I don't even need to be told that I personally was right. Yeah, that's right. I don't care.
But an acknowledgement that
they were wrong.
Right.
That what you did was wrong and it was inexcusable at the time and you did it because you were afraid. I care so little about the opinions of the people on the other side of this issue that the fact that you would turn around and tell me I am right means absolutely nothing to me. I don't care at all. Nothing personal. But you've demonstrated what your critical thinking skills are in a moment of true test and have been found wanting. So now the idea that I want your approval or your acknowledgement is laughable. So what I do want, though, is without that acknowledgement, without the idea, without you understanding you got it wrong and you got it wrong because you were scared and you panicked and you started listening to all these people that you shouldn't have been listening to as they were and let them get away with it and then championed the censorship and championed the shutting down of conversation because you were afraid. And then it wasn't even because you were afraid. It was because of blatant tribalism. It was because you had picked a side and you refused to acknowledge that your side was incorrect and you were ready to burn down everything to avoid having to acknowledge that you were wrong. The only reason I need you to acknowledge this before I will discuss amnesty is because without that, there is always the chance this happens again. And this can never happen again. Kathy Hochul passed her own little rule 2 weeks ago, giving the health commissioner the authority in the state of New York to issue a mask mandate on public transportation, private businesses, and schools. No. This is wholly unacceptable. You do not get to do that under any circumstances. And the fact that you're okay with it means we haven't actually learned the lesson. You want amnesty this time? Are you going to ask for amnesty again next time when we do all this again in 2 years? Like, what are we doing? And God forbid, what if there's something that is as bad as you were making this out to be in 2 years? Nobody's going to believe you. So without an acknowledgement, without some accountability,
yeah,
something to say, hey, it's not that we got it wrong because we didn't know. It was, you know what, we ignored the data that was in front of us. We silenced the people that were voicing opposing views, and that's why we got it wrong, and it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about forgiveness and moving on and amnesty, and I have no ill will towards you, but I don't trust you. I don't trust your judgment, and I know, because you've demonstrated this to me, you will push me under a bus in a minute for voicing a contrarian opinion, and you will shun me from society for the fact that I have a differing opinion than you. So I don't know how you want me to come back into the fold now to be like, all's good, guys. I know you were okay with my business going under. with me, my family all having to like not be able to travel. That was all okay with you because I didn't want to take a highly experimental vaccine with virtually no safety data. You couldn't wait to shun me from society over that. So, you know, give me some time. Maybe I'm not quite ready to just go, well, do you acknowledge what you did wrong? No, we just didn't know. Hard pass.
Yeah. No, like I said, maybe the conversation got started with that article, but that was not the right way to, at least it wasn't a great first attempt to reach out to try to mend that divide, I guess. But
at some point, listen, you need to have the accountability in this life. Like, I don't know. We're in a society where nobody ever wants to just take responsibility when they got something wrong. It's like the baseline things we teach our kids. If you are wrong, own it, apologize, and learn from it. Because if you don't apologize, if you don't own it, you are not learning. If you make excuses, that means you are not learning the lesson you should have learned from being wrong. This is something I harp on with my children all the time. Kids I coach, the kids I'm raising, my kids and the kids I coach. So that was a poor way of saying that. Everything I do with them is do not make an excuse why you struck out, why you lied, why you did this. Do not make an excuse. Because the second you start to excuse yourself, you are acknowledging that there's no need for growth from this. So instead of making the excuse, what is the lesson you should learn from this and how do you fix it next time? And that is societally what we have lost. Because now everybody's like, well, I know that I was championing vaccine mandates and passports, and I did want to make sure that your life was uncomfortable if you refused to get a vaccine that never blocked transmission. But it was because I was in a good place and you were right for the wrong reasons. So tell me what you learned from this. Like, how am I possibly supposed to trust that if this situation comes up again, you won't jam that knife right back into the side of me and kick me right into traffic and be like, hey, we got rid of that voice finally.
Yeah, exactly. So the trust will never be there until they have to at least acknowledge some kind of culpability in being wrong or what, I don't know, whatever. Like they, and that wasn't this, so.
Own the mistake. Learn from it. Don't excuse it. That's all I'm looking for. Then we'll discuss amnesty.
All right. And so we mentioned this, and let's switch a little bit here. We mentioned this a little bit ago that we will have this Election Day show, but let's talk a little bit about the midterms. Tease for tomorrow, I guess.
Sure.
From CNN Politics.
Oh, crap.
Democrats confront their nightmare scenario on election eve as economic concerns overshadow abortion and democracy worries. So I don't know if you've heard this, Mr. Huesong, or not, but as somebody who's not enrolled in one of the two parties, I have been getting a lot of knocks on my door from Democrats. And these are the exact, well, actually, the democracy worries were exactly what they were preaching to me when they came knocking. So, you know, I said, I'm not voting for either one of your candidates. So I'm like, well, let me give you these brochures back so you can repurpose them to somebody who else who cares, trying to be as polite as possible, knowing that, you know, costs are costs for a campaign. So here's my tip of the cap to you, but no, I'm not. Nope. Thank you, I guess. So, but that's what they were screeching, basically saying, oh, this is too, democracy is on the ballot. And I'm like, no, it's not, you know, basically, no, it's not, go away, please, whatever. But anyway, so sure, it is in practice what they're actually doing. They are preaching and screeching on threat to democracy. Obviously, every single ad or every other ad, at least, is about abortion. I think most people think it's going to be a red wave / red tsunami. Even 538 has something like 82% chance of the Republicans taking the House. They have a slightly less, or maybe a 50% chance of taking the Senate. I can't remember now at 538, but it's closer. I'm not sure it matters if that happens, other than it's a large protest vote for the last 2.5 years for a varying degree of topics that we've covered over the last 114 episodes. So what's your initial, save all your hot takes for tomorrow.
Sure.
But what are you looking for tomorrow? I think we both expect advantageous night for Republicans. And then what do you think about like New York specifically?
So stop me if you've heard this before.
Oh, okay.
All right. This election is different. It's just too important.
Listen, I can't tell you how many, like, nails on a chalkboard when I hear that nonsense. Yep. But go
no,
on.
No. This is, in years past, I would agree with you, but this time really is different. just like the one 2 years ago was, just like the one 4 years ago was, and six, and eight. And you'll start to notice a pattern. Every time, this one's just too important. And at some point, you have to stop listening to these people because they're so full of crap, it's laughable. I think that Republicans are in line for a very good night, and I think that will have such little impact nationally, like for any actual policy decisions, that it's a kind of a joke.
Yeah, they would have to get to a veto-proof majority in the Senate to
do anything.
Basically, you know, basically void out, nullify Joe Biden's existence.
Well, it's not only that. Let's keep in mind.
You know, in 2 years, this thing's going to be like filibuster-proof. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But go ahead. Hang on.
Keep in mind. It wasn't the Democrats that shut everything down in 2020. All right. It was the Republicans. It was
everybody.
Donald Trump. Yeah. Right. And it was them championing that cause for entirely too long. So when I say it's not going to have any grave impact, I mean, it's not going to have any grave impact. The spending is still going to be completely out of control. The push for higher and more federal government will just go up no matter what. It doesn't matter. Yeah, you'll get a little more gridlock, so maybe they'll do less, which would be glorious, because at this point, whatever we could do to minimize what the federal government does, great. But are they going to overturn the new 87,000 IRS agents?
I guess it's possible.
No, they're not. You know they're not.
I mean, they're not. That's not likely, but I mean, there's a path to do that.
Okay. Maybe you got more faith than I do.
No, I don't have any
faith. More
no, 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 no. I don't have any faith, but go ahead.
But the more that I look at it, I hope they win because I do want to check on power, but just let's temper our expectation. It's not like this is going to be the savior of the country in either direction. In New York State, I'm cheering very hard for Lee Zeldin far more than I am on a national level because I think New York State is so far out of whack, and I get he's an election denier and democracy is on the ballot. But the current tyrant that's operating in the governor's mansion is the one assuming all the executive power for herself and granting her and her direct reports this untoward amount of power to control our lives on a daily basis. So I consider that to be slightly larger of a threat. The fact that she just gave herself the authority to do mask mandates is horrifying. Well, her health commissioner, I'm sorry. That's a wholly independent body within the executive branch. Yeah. The other part of it that's going to be very interesting to me is if Kathy Hochul does win, this executive order specifically carves out that they can, at the discretion of the health commissioner, the mask rules can be different for those who are based on vaccine status. So we might have different standards for the people that got their sixth booster and the people that are not up to date on their COVID vaccinations, which, again, as we've covered in depth, is about 90% of eligible people are not up to date on their COVID vaccinations. So maybe this is where the pressure campaign comes in, which is why, listen, for the people that are going to vote third party, I get it. For the people that are going to like say, look, I got to vote against her, so I got to vote for Lee Zeldin, I get it. I don't blame you one way or the other, whichever way you go here. Everybody's got to vote their conscience. I hope to God Kathy Hochul is not in office. That being said, Lee Zeldin ain't giving me the warm and fuzzies either when he's number one. Like, I'm going to pass an executive action that undoes the bail reform law. Like, nope, not how that works, Lee. Nope, you got to get the law changed. But I guess if I have to choose my poison, I guess that one's the better or the lesser. But the lesser of the two evils is still evil, and we just keep moving in this direction. But don't forget, this one's more important. Here's why I don't think it really matters. As a state, we're so far beyond screwed anyway. It's so bad that it's all over but the crying. We could try to undo it. Let's get how long is the governor term? 4 years or six?
4 years.
4 years. We'll get 4 years of Lee Zeldin, and then we'll go right back in, and it will be at best slightly different executive branch abuses than what we're currently seeing.
Yeah, my predicted app is my 24-cent bet on Lee Zeldin got up to as high as 30 cents and is now as 25 cents, so I don't think he's going to win.
I hope he does.
Yeah.
He would have to,
I read an article this morning and I'll cover it again tomorrow and we can cover this in more detail tomorrow. We talked about crime being a huge issue, and that's been basically the pivotal issue, and I think that's where he's kind of going to try to drive it home in New York City. He's going to talk about crime because he has to get to a certain level in New York City, or it doesn't matter, right? Like, that's the whole, in New York,
right?
To win a statewide election, you have to, as a Republican, you have to, I think 30% is what they kind of like an unofficial, hey, if a Republican candidate can get 30% in New York City, that gives him a shot to get the whole thing. So, and, you know, Lee Zeldin has promoted that idea specifically and said, hey, look, at this one poll, I'm at 35%. So I think he knows that he probably has a stranglehold on much of upstate New York. You know, we'll see what happens in the blue sections of upstate, the Buffaloes, the Rochesters, the Syracuses of the world. But it's going to matter what he gets in New York City, period, end of story. And if he, you know, he has a little bit of an advantage because he's a Suffolk County? He's Long Island.
Long Island.
So, I mean, he's downstate-ish, I guess. You know, I don't, he's not city, but Long Island, and I don't know what the dynamic is between those two things. But I do think that gives him, I'm guessing, better name recognition in New York City than being from, you know, I don't know, Messina, say?
Probably.
Know? But I said this last week, and I still think this is, if he gets within like 3-4 points, which is, you know, probably it's kind of where I'm guessing it's going to end up falling, then all of upstate goes red. Like, I mean, the turnout that will have happened if he got to 3-4% is it's going to shift the state legislature, I feel like, instantaneously.
I hope. Listen, I can't take this anymore with between the gun control laws, all of the crap having to do with COVID, the stuff that they've done at schools and education funding and how it all gets tied together of this is an example of why you don't ever want one party rule anywhere, because this is such utter corruption and incompetence across the board that we're witnessing right now that it's a joke. So, Kathy Hochul is terrible. She is a terrible, terrible governor. She is a petty tyrant that is going to assume every amount of power and control that she can. She is arguably in contempt of the Supreme Court right now by passing the updated gun laws that she did in direct defiance of the Supreme Court's rulings, knowing it's going to get shot down, and did it anyway. Like, I have a problem with that. I don't think that's right. So I hope to God that we do get a red wave, at least in New York. In New York, there's a chance it could be different, because if you could get enough votes to overturn the SAFE Act, that is an appreciable level of freedom that we get back as citizens.
I mean, listen, that's pretty aggressive in my world to get to that point. But even if they could just get to a point in the legislature where they could strip the emergency powers from the governor for once, you know, like, hey, let's actually have a legislative representative government in the state as opposed to king or queen ruling from Albany. So let's figure out if we can just, and listen, I said this last week or maybe the show before, but the Democrats need a bloodbath to shift their actions, right? Like there's been no reason for them to change. They've just been running steamshot over everybody. And if they get knocked back significantly tomorrow, and I think there's a good chance that they may, I'm guessing some people who were not really all in on the, the hard left, if you will, I'll call it, maybe snap out of it and become more moderate and less willing to go along to get along kind of thing. But that's what this state needs. It needs, because it's a one party rule and it has been that way for 40 years, basically. Mm-hmm. There's no incentive to change your actions from that party. They've been able to do anything they want with no accountability. So hopefully they get accountability. I think the only way they get accountability is through a bloodbath.
I think you and I have discussed at length the problem with the two-party system. The flaws are just exacerbated when it's a one-party system. So the two-party system sucks, but the one-party system is so egregiously bad that it's indefensible. I have family members that I know their personal beliefs on stuff, and they're still going to go vote. They're going to go vote for Kathy Hochul because they're lifelong Democrats and this, that, and the other. And I'm staring at them like, wait a minute.
Tell them to write in Larry Sharp.
I'll let them know. I'm sure they will. But I'm, it's not even a second thought. I'm just like, I know where your stance is on abortion. I know what your stance is on gun control. I know what your stances are on all of these things. I know where you stand on these crime bills. I've heard you talk about them. But you're just going to go and pull the lever. And if you are like a true believer of the party values and you go pull it, God bless you. But I'm looking at them like, you don't belong here anymore. Like, you do not subscribe to the beliefs that are being espoused by this party, except that Donald Trump is terrible.
Well, speaking of that, and we'll end on this, and then we'll move on to the next topic here. So, scoop from Axios, Trump team eyes November 14th announcement. So, I think that's late. I think he makes the announcement before that date. I think he, if in fact what we just talked about happens tomorrow, like there's no reason for him to wait more than a day or two. He should just jump on the wave and, you know.
I think his daughter's birthday is this week. So I think he's waiting until after her birthday.
I don't think he cares about her birthday.
I'm just
saying.
That's
my guess. So I don't know. We expect him to announce, yeah?
Yeah.
So, and I know you told me off the air that you don't think DeSantis is going to run if Trump announces. Are you sticking by that?
You're starting to persuade me that he might. You're not wrong in that. That might be correct. I'm not sure, though.
I think he runs, which sets up crazy. You know, they had dueling rallies in Florida on the same day.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think 2 days ago. One was Trump was there campaigning for Marco Rubio, and DeSantis was holding his own rally across the state, but almost at the same, I don't know if they were at the same time, but on the same day. So why not just do it together?
They don't like each other?
Oh, yeah. And if you guys didn't hear, but during Trump's rally in Pennsylvania, he referred to Governor DeSantis as Ron DeSanctimonious. Like he can't help himself.
He is a child.
Did you see? Speaking of child, I guess I'll pull that up when we talk about Elon at the end. Speaking of child.
Oh, God, help me.
All right. So, hopefully you guys will all tune in tomorrow. We, again, hope to go on the air sometime around 8:45, 9 o'clock, kind of set the table for everybody. And then hopefully we don't have a 902 announcement of Dictator Hochul for another 4 years, because I feel like that's just steamrolling towards. Hopefully we get to talk about that for more than 2 minutes, I guess. But I hope to have, Assemblyman Salka on right at 9 p.m. He's actually going to be at the watch party for U.S. Congressional candidate Brandon Williams, who his campaign manager has also agreed to come on the show. So we'll have some peoples.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of. And maybe more. Like I said, I have a couple other names in the chamber, if you will, that I haven't asked yet, because I just don't know how it's going to go. And I may leave open some possibilities.
Flex time.
We could be on the air for quite a bit, I guess. You know, I don't have a curfew, but I don't know. You might.
I probably do.
Okay.
I'm old.
I mean, I'm at my house. So
you are.
All right, so again, tune in tomorrow. I shared I posted the link in the chat, so hopefully you guys can do that. I'll try to. It's going to be on Rumble and YouTube again. I think we're live streaming on both right now, successfully, barely after the rough intro. But anyway,
it's 'cause you're so good.
No, so I want to cover this story before we talk about Elon, because it's kind of Elon related, I guess. From The Intercept. I'm not a huge fan of The Intercept. I feel like they're a little too stenographer for me sometimes, especially on foreign policy related stuff sometimes. But anyway, I found this article very interesting, and it got referenced a few times after the release. But the title is Truth Cops, Leaked Documents Outline DHS, the Department of Homeland Security's Plan to Police Disinformation. So apparently the Department of Homeland Security had a direct line to companies such as Twitter and Facebook and the social media companies and giants that were curating posts and information for our safety, Mr. Huesong. On a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked are you? Shocked being the most.
Can I go negative?
Can we just abolish the DHS? Are they third? Can they just be on the list now?
Yes.
The abolish all alphabet agencies. I mean, listen. Not shocked, but come on. I mean, you know, the whole time they're talking about, oh, this is a private company. Your First Amendment rights don't matter on the private company, and then there they are in the background, the government basically pulling down the posts, telling the private company what to do, which is exactly the problem that everybody thought was happening. But no, apparently. Special Facebook portals and access to content curators and moderators is just standard issue for our government.
Knock me over with a feather. I'm just, you see this face? Utter shock right here. No, I could have told you this was happening. It was always the most likely scenario. It was way too convenient about how it was happening, how the process by which it happened and who it was happening to, that it became fairly obvious. And I'm going to back up a step, because even when we had the discussion, and I've always, I think, been pretty consistent, I've tried to be consistent on this issue, which is, you're right, social media is private companies, and private companies are absolutely not the ones that are subject to First Amendment restrictions, meaning The federal government is not to infringe upon your right to the freedom of speech. All right. It's not private companies are not allowed to. Like, if you say something terrible, your boss can fire you. If you say something innocuous that your boss just doesn't like, they can fire you. Your boss can just, what's the right word here? Your boss can fire you for virtually any reason. Can discriminate against you for anything outside of, like, race, sex, and about five other protected classes. Anything else, a private company has the right, can kick you out of their store, kick you out of their business, bar you from buying their products, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here's what's different. I think anybody who espouses or supports restrictions on the freedom of speech and the free exchange of ideas is just fundamentally a bad idea. That's it. I think that I do not support anybody who, whether they're a government actor or not, seeks to restrict the free speech of other people. I don't care if you call it medical disinformation. I don't care if you call it misinformation. I don't care if you call it lies and slander or whatever else. I am generally opposed to any restrictions on the free exchange of ideas because I think the free exchange of ideas is so fundamentally important to any growth as a society. You think about the number of positions that were at one time politically unpopular in this country, and imagine if you were forced to stay with the status quo because everything else was late, but the government got to decide what was misinformation and couldn't be discussed. I mean, my God, that's a long list. Yeah. So whether it's private companies or not, the fact that the federal government is involved with this determining who gets their voice quieted, their reach restricted, and their opinions as deemed unworthy of public consumption, every single person who values individual liberty and freedom whatsoever should be horrified by this. I don't know how you can't be. The government, and I love the people that are still out here defending it. Like, well, they didn't really do it. They were just suggesting. What would it take for you to at least acknowledge that this is wrong? That this is not the government's place in our world? At least not in this country. That is not what our government is there to do. You do not get to determine what can and cannot be discussed. That by definition makes you authoritarian.
So go read that article in The Intercept. It's got some examples in there than how basically, you know, this pipeline of content moderation is still exists to this day. So you remember, the DHS is the home of the now disbanded Disinformation Governance Board. So
can we put an asterisk by disbanded? Maybe yeah. Temporarily disbanded based yeah. on some yeah, of the right. stuff
Sounds
they're
like
talking
it's,
about?
Still happening. Yeah. So, all right. Before we touch on the last topic of the day, I'll remind everybody again to please like the video, share the video with all your friends and family. Remind you and your folks, if you're bored watching Election Day coverage on, I don't know where you watch your Election Day coverage, Fox, NBC, wherever, we're going to be a much better, more entertaining outfit to be getting the results from, I promise you. So please tune in tomorrow. And those of you listening at home or riding in your car or whatever, please, when you get a chance, please leave us a
Rumble.
A Rumble, a rate and review, all the good stuff. So let's talk Elon, Twitter takeover aftermath. I think I told you, I signed up for Twitter Blue the day that it became official. Maybe the next day. It might have been the same day. I don't know.
You're such a nerd.
I know. That's just like when I bought Dogecoin like 2 weeks ago. But anyway, so I didn't know they were going to Twitter Blue was actually even going to be the verification thing. Like, I literally just did it because I was like, I'm just going to give this dude $5 because he bought the company, right? Like, that's all I was doing. 2 days later, boom, they're like, Twitter Blue, now you can get verified. And all of a sudden, and I actually had a thing that says, welcome to Twitter Blue and enjoy your verification, right? So I have this little thing on my thing. I don't have a verification badge yet. So, I did not pay $8, so maybe next month when I have to pay $8 instead of $4.99, they'll get me. But I also heard that they're not doing any upgrading of verifications until after tomorrow.
Okay.
Election day. Because apparently there's going to be a flood of blue check marks changing voters' ideas in the last minutes between today and tomorrow. How many more ads do you think you would need before you've made up your mind politically? How many more political ads do you need to see?
At least 213. at least.
So I don't expect most people to pay the $8, you know, users. I don't think a lot of them will. Maybe some of them will. But I do think that all these journalists and celebrities and companies, they all will, right? I mean, I should have done this check, but there's probably a list of a thereabouts number of how many verified accounts there actually are on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you could just multiply that by 8 and you could figure out how much money that is and be like, okay, the majority of them are probably going to keep that thing. So I'll probably keep it for the time being just to see what kind of new features are, because I can edit tweets now up to 30 minutes, I think it is. Oh, I haven't done it yet, but I can edit tweets, yeah.
I'm not paying $8. I don't want to be verified.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I don't expect most people to be verified. Like, I don't, there's no benefit in it unless you're trying to, you know, listen, if you're trying to say, I give you a reason to get verified, let's just say. So here we're trying to disseminate information, right?
Sure.
So we would like to be like, oh, these people are real people. So like, as opposed to fake person and real person. So at least one of us will be real on the broadcast.
I'm glad.
And that'll kind of play cover for you a little bit.
I mean, listen, I think the idea behind verification typically is that, especially if you have people with common names, you want to know you're listening to the right one. My name is Ben Husong. I don't think there's another one of me in the world, all right? I'm pretty
Not
sure
true.
I'm going to be okay.
There's another Ben Husong on Twitter because
really?
Sometimes I have to flip, or maybe it's Facebook. There's another one where I'm like, what the hell? There's another one? And I don't know if it was like an old, I always meant to ask you if it was an old account because I never actually clicked on it to see, but maybe. I always knew what you were. Anyway,
I don't know. I'm going to look now, though.
I'm almost positive that I'm right. But anyway, so.
Oh, no, that's Husong, Hussung.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, not the same. Get it together, man.
Okay.
That's Bad. It. See? What?
That's your fat. This is your burner name?
Why would I? I changed it by one letter.
So tricky.
I know.
Other changes to Twitter. So you're not getting verified. I'm going to at least temporarily stay verified.
Listen,
if in 2 months, like, Project Veritas is not back on the platform, I'm like, I'm not paying that dude any money.
Yeah.
Like, what? There's some obvious, like, unbannings that need to happen. Like, I'm not even whatever about Trump and. But Project Veritas to me is like, they basically were just banned because they didn't like him. Like, there's no legitimate reason. And Elgato Malo, right? Like, I mean,
right.
if there's certain people where I'm like, okay, if you can't come to the realization that these people were banned for political ideology, then there is no hope moving forward and you don't deserve my $8.
Project Veritas, Borikato, and there was one other one that I'm thinking of that I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but those are the ones where there's no gray area.
Right.
This was black and white of, look, this is wrong. Donald Trump, in my opinion, should be put back on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but there's not a strong argument.
Yeah, being an idiot is not
right.
You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
What do I always say? Free speech. If you have terrible ideas, I want you to voice them. I want to know if you're an idiot. I want to know if you're a racist. And I want to know if you're a sexist.
And I didn't
know.
I still haven't yet to follow Donald Trump on Twitter, and I was never on Twitter enough to care what he had to say, but I would love to follow him now and just be like, or even I don't have to follow him because everybody else freaking shares his tweets, so I don't have to follow the dude. The platform would be fun. I mean, it would be entertaining. He's the P.T. Barnum of our day, I feel like, in a lot of ways.
I mean, I agree. But the fact that somebody made this point, like, the supreme leader of Iran is allowed to be on Twitter, but Donald Trump's too dangerous. Yeah. Like, wait a minute. Like, let's just have some consistency.
So here's one thing that is new since the Elon takeover that has been a little, I didn't know this was going to happen, but, and it organically, or I don't know about organically, but I've seen it work a few times where I'm like, okay, some information has been changed and tweets have been deleted. A crowdsourced fact check has been added to Twitter. So, like, Biden got fact checked by the readers, right? So people basically were allowed to fact check the president on his assertion that he was, well, I think this was like the Social Security increase or whatever. Like, he was claiming responsibility or that he had somehow played a role in it. And basically a bunch of people said.
No, let me just apply the context
to
this because it was utterly hilarious.
Go ahead.
He said, today seniors are going to receive the highest increase in their Social Security in 30 years, thanks to my administration. But, little caveat, do you know how they calculate Social Security increases every year? Is it based on economic data? Is it based on how good things are? Is it based on the sentiment of the voters? No, it's a direct mouth calculation having to do with the consumer price index as a reflective of inflation. So because we're at record high inflation,
well,
the seniors automatically got record
high cost. Fact check true. What the hell?
Right, because
if he's claiming responsibility for the increased then yes.
It's literally called a cost of living adjustment. Like, yeah. It is an inflation adjustment to the So for him to take a victory lap on this is the most comically tone-deaf thing you could have ever asked for a politician to do.
But this has this whole feature, I like it, right? Because this kind of gives a, if it is what I think it is, it gives the chance for the crowd, you know, knowledge of the masses, of the
crowd,
right?
I might actually push you.
What's that?
If you say the wisdom of the crowd, I might, like, we might fight.
Well, no, but I'm just saying this gives a public display of information that can be pushed back upon. And like I said, that tweet was deleted by the president, right? Or whoever
that's
it was.
So funny.
So, and that's not the only example, but this, I think this feature is a good feature.
I agree.
Something that I didn't really contemplate, and I thought it was a nice addition to whatever. But one of the things I wanted to talk about that seems maybe a little bit more nefarious about this whole aftermath is the Twitter advertiser boycott, right? So all these global entities are rallying around or rallying against, I guess, Elon's takeover of Twitter, pausing their advertising on the platform. You know, it seems pretty obvious that it was coordinated. And if you guys, again, I have this link in the show notes to Jordan Schachtel, who's an investigative reporter. Headline, Twitter advertiser boycott. This is on Substack, by the way. Twitter advertiser boycott organized by dark money, Soros, Clinton, and foreign networks. So he goes in to kind of outline this company called, let me pull it up here, Accountable Tech. Which again, this is you know, Pfizer, our one and only Pfizer pulled their advertising, or at least paused it. Audi, General Mills, others as well. But so this Accountable Tech, and this is where it gets juicy, is financed by the North Fund, a DC nonprofit that is controlled by Arabella Advisors. Yes, there are multiple levels of confusion, and that's kind of part of the separation. So they have all these entities layering themselves to kind of create at least plausible deniability and probably a avoidance of some kind of culpability as well. So
the complexity is not a bug.
No.
It's a feature.
For sure. So Arabella is a for-profit philanthropic consulting company founded by Clinton confidant Eric Kessler.
Philanthropic consulting company?
Yeah.
I love these people so much.
And I'm just going to read here right from the article, from, again, Schachtel's article. It said, therefore, it shouldn't come as a surprise that Jesse Larrick, another Clinton network operative, is co-founder of Accountable Tech, the organization that employs the Clinton campaign operative, Zach Price, as its digital director. So it is a web of evil that is, you know, far entrenched. And, you know, I do think these are some of the entities that push back against people like Trump and Elon if these guys are actually, in fact, you know, not part of the gang themselves. They seem to be kind of rankling some feathers here anyway, but go ahead.
Two quick things.
Yeah.
Number one, the idea that Elon Musk is somehow a force for the right is, we are the most bizarro world of politics ever, of like the guy who's trying to get everybody to drive an electric car, who wants to make Earth a multi-planetary species because he's so convinced that climate change is going to wipe us all off the face of the Earth, is somehow in reality a Republican operative. What world did we move to where this is even a possibility for the sin of championing free speech? Like, what is the more liberal position than I'm all for the right of the freedom of speech of every individual? Like, that used to be a liberal position. So I don't understand how he is suddenly seen as some right-wing troll. That's number one. Number two, the people funding this, let's just be clear about who they are. These are political beings. These are the leeches of society. They contribute nothing to the betterment of our world. They don't produce anything. They don't make anything. They do nothing to make your life or my life better or for the betterment of the economy, the country, the poor, whomever. All they are is they exist in this system where there is glut in politics because there is so much money that they now just get to make their money by being greasy, slimy, undeserving scumbags that do nothing but try to thwart public policy with their own ends. And there's operatives on both sides of the aisle. Please don't misunderstand me. These people should be ridiculed and laughed out of every conversation that we've ever had relating to politics. They are swamp creatures. They are nothing more than designed to exist within this system to profit off of it for their own well-being and push their own ends. They do nothing to help out whatsoever at a societal level. And if we could get the federal government and state government shrunk down to a responsible, respectable level, these people would cease to exist, which is why they do not want that to happen, because they can contribute nothing to society outside of this world where they have created this own their own little ecosystem for them to survive and thrive and make ridiculous money in. And how in the world do you think that's for the betterment of you? How do you ever get to the point where you're like, you know what? I'll bet you this philanthropic consultant is probably really out for my well-being. Not to go collect a $10 million a year paycheck to run a think tank. My God, where do you think the money comes from?
And later in that article, if you read on, there's hundreds of millions of dollars in these companies. So it's not, it's no small feat. So, All right, I got a couple more. So let's just tie Elon back to our election coverage that we had earlier. I don't know if you saw this from earlier today, 10:22 a.m. from Elon Musk. This is a tweet. To independent-minded voters, shared power curbs the worst excesses of both parties. Therefore, I recommend voting for a Republican Congress, given that the presidency is Democratic. And then he subtweets himself here. Hardcore Democrats or Republicans never vote for other side, so independent voters are the ones who actually decide who's in charge. So this is a plea to independent voters to vote Republican in this midterm election. He's already kind of made it clear that he likes, at least between DeSantis and Trump, that he prefers DeSantis. But I'm not sure this is, I mean, I don't mind him, again, you know, speak your mind, buddy, but doesn't seem like this is probably a great PR move for his bank accounts or his companies.
I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares either. I don't know. Like I said, I don't mind him injecting political commentary. I mean, I'd like to hear what he has to say. I'd like to hear what most people have to say. So
the guy never voted for a Republican in his entire life before 2020. Never. He said it. Like, I never considered voting for a Republican before. Like, yeah. This dude is a lefty all the way through and through. Like, it's not some alt-Christian conservative that was like, you know what we need is everybody to drive electric cars. You know what we need is we need to colonize Mars because we are destroying the planet with our carbon dioxide output. Like, that is not a Republican position. I'm so lost as to how those became attributable to the Republican cause. Like, if you ask the average, true, dyed-in-the-wool, ultra-red conservative, hey, do you think we need to colonize Mars to avoid humanity collapsing due to climate change? What do you think the response is going to be?
Give me a PBR.
Shut the fuck up and get out of my face, you libtard. Like, that's going to be the response. So the idea that now he's being attributed, and listen, he's saying that he wants a balance. What a shocking statement to be made.
The fact that he's literally, that's controversial is just kind of an indictment of where we are.
It's so. Such a joke that this is where we are.
Yeah. All right. Okay, now I got one more Elon thing that's kind of a prelude to maybe a future show of ours. So I think I've mentioned this gentleman to you multiple times. I don't think I've talked with or the crowd here, but Jim Cantrell, who worked with Elon at SpaceX, he's a legitimate rocket scientist, CEO of something called Phantom X, where he basically makes rockets, was... for lack of a better word, Elon's muse entering into the rocket world. So he basically hit up Jim Cantrell, tried to pick his brain and whatever. But the headline is, I worked for Elon Musk in the early days of SpaceX. Twitter execs need to, this is his assessment of the takeover here. So Twitter execs need to be ready to work with two different people, good Elon and bad Elon. Remember we've been talking about there's two, if he's a good guy or bad, he's both. He's the definite Bond villain. He's got two, he's like Heckle and Jide, or what is it, Jekyll and Hyde? Jekyll. Yeah. Let's make up the other one. He's Heckle and Jide. That's way better. Well, he's definitely a heckler.
Oh, God help me. That was so bad.
So why I bring this up is also because it's pertinent, but Jim Cantrell has agreed to come on the show for an interview.
All right.
He's got a book coming out. He said this fall, so it could be anytime Right. We're just waiting.
So
as soon as I get the book and give it a peruse and figure out a strategy to pick this gentleman's brain, we're going to do so. So
I like it.
Yeah. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I don't know, maybe like a month or so, depending on when the book comes out, give a couple of weeks after that. So we'll have Mr. Cantrell on the show. And I asked him if we could talk Elon. He said yes. So we can ask him some Elon questions. I think he also has a affinity for like ancient civilizations, I feel like. So that's going to be fun for me.
This is going to be an hour-long interview.
No. I mean, no? Maybe.
All right, you liar.
Maybe.
You're going to get to ask this guy about rockets going to space, ancient civilizations, and Elon Musk, yeah. And you don't think this is going to take an hour.
It's going to be good. Good Lord. All right. I'm done, Mr. Hyosung. What about you?
Anything else?
All right. Well, let's remind everybody again about tomorrow. Let's say 8:45-ish. We'll be going live, hopefully on both streams again, unless we get banned by YouTube between now and then. So Rumble and YouTube, we should be live streaming. Maybe I'll try to figure out how to do Facebook, too.
All right.
Probably ruin everything. But anyway, we're at least going to try to do the multi-stream tomorrow for Election Day coverage. Again, we have a handful of guests coming on. Hopefully they'll be able to give some interesting perspectives and some analysis. I'm looking forward to it.
Same.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, please remember that just because somebody votes differently than you doesn't mean they're a terrible person or an idiot. It's just a different value system.
Did I tell you that I'm already getting blamed? Me personally getting blamed for Lee Zeldin losing? He's like, if the libertarians don't vote, that's going to be their fault.
Then he should have reached out.
Yeah. I mean, I say that in jest a little bit. I mean, nobody really cares about me all that much. But anyway, the idea that the libertarian, even if we're successful in what we're trying to do, write in Larry Sharp, hashtag write in Larry Sharp. So any of you who don't like either one of these two candidates, I'll just throw out there, write in Larry Sharp to help reestablish ballot access for the Libertarian Party.
And really, to make it fair, do it twice.
Just make sure you check the bubble and write in Larry Sharp. But anyway, there's even if we reached our goal of 130,000 votes, they're mostly coming from upstate. So like he's already going to win upstate. He needs to worry about downstate. Downstate is what matters. And until
there's not a lot of libertarians in Manhattan.
No, I mean, listen, we have the third most libertarians in the country because New York City is so big and there's just so many people there. So you just, there's more there than most places, I guess. But not really all that influential, shocker.
Underrepresented in the total population of the city. Exactly correct.
But anyway, the idea that if we're successful in our 100, listen, if he loses by 129,000 votes, I'm going to love it because I literally love to play spoiler all times because I feel like what you suggested to is reach out. There was a path for me. If he could have made some kind of concessions, this is Lee Zeldin here, and made a public statement like, hey, we're going to undo a wrong and bring all these third parties back by retroactively pulling back these the ballot laws that Andrew Cuomo passed in the budget in 2020. And we're going to grandfather in everybody who lost ballot access. We're going to give them their full share of ballot access starting next year. He would have got libertarian votes. He probably would have got Larry Sharp's vote.
Yeah, probably. I think that the Republicans continue to make this mistake that they are somehow entitled to the libertarian vote when it comes down, when push comes to shove.
Because we're just trying to get ballot access. We're just trying to gain access to the system.
But the Republicans fail to acknowledge, well, the Democrats are a far bigger threat than they are to the libertarian causes in most instances. What they fail to recognize is that the libertarians are a separate party, is that they don't share the Republican ideology from top to bottom, which therefore means they're not going to vote for you automatically. And if you're not going to reach them where they are, then you shouldn't expect their vote. Now, you can get mad about that. You could be dismissive of it and call it a stupid ideology and a stupid party. Cool. But in this state where you need every possible vote you can to have a chance at winning, what a tragic miscalculation.
Yeah, at the risk of getting too far into this at the very end of the show, I think his failed Independence Party petitioning fiasco is the main obstacle because I couldn't bring myself to vote for him unless he acknowledged that what happened happened. So anyway, we can talk about that in more detail tomorrow. But anyway, so on that note, anything else you want to leave the folks with?
Just be good. Be good. Kind. Be well.
And vote early and often. Isn't that how the gold is, Dave?
I think so.
All right, let's get out of here. We'll see you all again. Hopefully we'll see you all tomorrow. And if not, we'll see you all next Monday.